our winning the boosters. If you haven't been here the last couple of weeks, we have been talking about the characters that we find in A.A. Milne's stories about Winnie the Pooh, some of whom you can see up front here, and Eeyore has been stuck at the back the last couple of weeks in the back of the font. He hasn't found his way up front yet. You can listen to the two previous sermons online if you wish on our website. And as I did last week, I will bring the scripture readings right into the message today. This morning, I begin by recounting one of the stories in the Winnie the Pooh books where Pooh, Piglet, and Rabbit encounter some new and not entirely welcome strangers to the 100-acre wood. It begins this way. Nobody seems to know where they came from, but there they were in the forest, Kanga and Baby Roo. When Pooh asked Christopher Robin, "How did they come here?" Christopher Robin said, "In the usual way, if you know what I mean, Pooh." And Pooh, who didn't, said, "Oh." Then he nodded his head twice and said, "In the usual way, ah." Then he went to call upon his friend Piglet to see what he thought about it, and at Piglet's house he found Rabbit. So they all talked about it together. "What I don't like about it is this," said Rabbit. "Here we are, you, Pooh, and you, Piglet, and me, and suddenly," "and Eeyore," said Pooh, "and Eeyore, and then suddenly, an owl," said Pooh, "an owl, and then all of a sudden, oh, and Eeyore," said Pooh, "I was forgetting him." "Here we are," said Rabbit very slowly and carefully, "all of us, and then suddenly we wake up one morning and what do we find? We find a strange animal among us. An animal of whom we have never even heard before. An animal who carries her family about with her in her pocket." So the story begins. And after some further conversation about pockets and how they work and how many rabbits we need to carry around his family, Rabbit hatched a plan to get rid of Kanga and Roo forever. And after convincing Pooh and Piglet that the plan would indeed work and that they were instrumental to the plan, Pooh and Piglet happily went along with this plan to get rid of Kanga and Roo. In the end, of course, all works out. All become good friends, just the way we would like it to work out. It's lovely and it's fantasy. For as we all know, in reality, it doesn't always work out. My heart is heavy this week as I watch and read about a terrible events that have taken place in Charlottesville, Virginia, and Barcelona, Spain, in Turku, Finland, and closer to home. These kinds of events seem to be increasingly common as we watch ever more frequent news cycles reporting atrocities in all parts of the world. We're not exempt in Canada, much as we'd like to think that we are, with the Quebec mosque shootings this year, and just this week, the threat against a Calgarian, Nimra Amjad, who is running for a school trustee in Calgary. Someone posted racist threats on Facebook saying to her, among other things, "You will be lying dead on the street like Heather Hare." The 32-year-old woman killed in Charlottesville after a car plowed through counter protesters. It is time, my friends, to be concerned. It's time to say to ourselves that we cannot turn a blind eye or ignore this kind of unrest going on in the world because it could happen here. It can happen anywhere. This week, We had a call to the church asking if we were going to go to the Pride event this coming Saturday in Ethelberger Park. Our helper in the office responded in the affirmative. But when the caller found out that we were going to participate in and support it, not to protest, she became very irate and hung up. The organizing group, Foothills Rainbow Connection, has received a lot of nasty online email after the article after the article about the event was published in the Western Beetle this past week. It can happen here. What really astounds me is that A.A. Milne, almost 100 years ago, captured this attitude in an innocuous little story about a bear and his friends. Rabbit, the somewhat short-tempered, rushed, annoyed bunny, has an intense dislike for strangers who infringe on the safety and security of his comfortable domicile. He doesn't like Kanga and Roo, and in a later story, he has a strong dislike for Tigger, for all of whom he hatches plans to get rid of for good. Perhaps, though not as surprising as we may think, as we get to know a little bit about A.A. Milne, who served as a signaling officer in the First World War and had an intense dislike of war. In fact, he was a vocal pacifist, writing about his distaste for conflict. So it is that he captures in this character, Rabbit, a character that initially dislikes strangers, but who somehow finds a way to come around in the end to liking and accepting them. But of course, first he has to get to know them. Hatred is based on fear. Fear of the unknown. Fear that we will somehow lose out. Fear that the other is going to take our place. Fear that they will hurt us. Fear that our way of life will become compromised, or fear that we will become less if someone else gets more. Fear is an extremely powerful emotion. It can drive a lot of our actions without us even knowing it. It can drive addiction, it can drive avoidance, aggression, rejection. It can determine our politics, who we associate with, how we live our lives. Fear prevents us from living our best lives. Fear is destructive and insidious. Until we get in touch with our fears and address them openly, talk about them, acknowledge them personally and societally, we will live lives that are reduced to only the places where we feel safe. And we will fight to keep things that way, to keep the things we fear away from us. But in these situations, we will never feel safe. As Rabbit expressed in the story, and I'm paraphrasing, there's us and there's them. And there's us and there's them. And them don't belong here. Let's find a way to get rid of them. Then we'll get back to us, which is so much more comfortable and easy, or so he thinks. He didn't even want to consider that they could become us. That in fact we could be community together. What fascinates me also is that A.A. Milne added another little test, another little twist to this very telling little story. Rabbit didn't want Kanga and Roo in the forest because they were different. And he made a rather flimsy case for getting rid of them. But Pooh and Piglet, these nice little caring characters, went along with enthusiasm. Sounded reasonable to them to try and get rid of Kanga and Roo. How brilliant of A.A. Milne to show us the nature of human weakness. It's not just the rabbits of the world who threaten peace, but it's the Poohs and the Piglets, the nice ones who just go along or don't speak up, who ultimately magnify the problem. I confess that far too often I am one of them. concentration camp survivor Eli Wiesel wrote, "We must take sides. Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented. Sometimes we must interfere. When human lives are endangered, when human dignity is in jeopardy, national borders and sensitivities become irrelevant. Wherever men and women are persecuted because of their race, religion, or political views, that place must, at that moment, become the center of the universe." Martin Luther King Jr., the great defender of civil rights, proclaimed, "In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends." In the book of Leviticus, God admonishes the Israelite people who have entered the promised land, who have known persecution themselves in a foreign land. He says to them, "When a stranger resides with you in your land, you shall do them no wrong. The stranger who resides with you shall be to you as a native among you, and you shall love them as yourself, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." And in the book of Hebrews, we are reminded, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing." The very nature of hospitality is to show kindness not to people we know, because that's a given, but to strangers. And that's what Rabbit missed out on. We cannot afford to, for it will destroy communities, nations, and ultimately the world, if we don't understand that we must make room for others who are not like us. For in the end, they will indeed enrich our lives. We must make way for love. And the more hatred and fear is expressed, the more we need to step up and express love. We do not want to live in a world where fear and hatred are the basis for mistrust and prejudice. This is exactly what the writer of 1 John expresses when he says, "There is no fear in love, for perfect love casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not reached perfection in love." To live what we believe as Christians, we must combat fear, hatred, and anger with love. And we must do it publicly with our words and with our actions. We need to create a culture where all feel they are loved and wanted and valued. To do that, we have to practice justice. We must make sure that people have what they need to live their lives with dignity and never feel rejected by society. I've done a lot of reading this week, as I'm sure many of you have. But one thing jumped out at me, one observation that one writer had made. Brian McLaren, who is a respected Christian leader in the world today, was invited to Charlottesville by local religious leaders to observe the rally that was going to take place in Charlottesville last week. Early this week, he started posting on his blog. And I encourage you to read some of those postings on his blog because they're very informative. I cannot delve into all the nuances of the situation, but they're worth reading because I think he takes a very tempered response to what's going on. But one thing that he said in his very first blog, after his observations of what was going on there, struck me in particular. What he said is this, that almost all of the protesters on the white national side, the ones who organized the initial rally, were young white males, with a few females. It seems to me, and I could be way off on this, that young males these days, at least in Western society, are more prone than ever to being radicalized. And that is dangerous. What is it, though, that is making these young people, particularly young men, so afraid, so angry, and so distant from the rest of society? They are needing something that they are not getting. And it is affecting the world in drastic ways. We have to figure out what they need. And yet we also need to reject behavior that hurts, vilifies, or damages others. Those who do not speak strongly against such actions become polluters, just like Piglet and Pooh with rabbit full speeds. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter, said Martin Luther King Jr. We cannot remain silent. Too many of us do. We hear those little jokes or those little jabs, and we don't speak up, we don't say anything. But we need to hear voices that speak up for justice, for love, for what is right. Of course, there will be a cost for speaking up. Not everyone will like what we have to say or what we do. Not speaking, though, will cost us far more in the end. It'll cost us even our own respect and dignity, or our own sense of value and worth to ourselves and to our own identities. I hope I never walk away and think I should have done something or said something that I was afraid of. Because there is a cost for not doing it. We're seeing it every day. This week, I don't know if you listen to CBC or follow her, but CBC correspondent and food writer in Calgary, Julie Van Rosendahl, decided to do something about what she was seeing and hearing. So she put out a challenge to engage in pop-up potlucks in the park. And it took off. Got national attention and international attention this week. And she wrote in a posting, "Well, here goes something," she says. "Regarding my earlier post about what she was feeling, all of you who were eager to do something, let's do it. Let's do what we can in whatever ways we can to bring people together and light up the dark everywhere, wherever you are. I went to the dollar store yesterday and bought a bunch of tiki torches. This weekend, a week since the events in Charlottesville and the killing of Heather Hare, let's gather in parks and living rooms and backyards and use those garden torches to illuminate conversation and make some real connections. To stand up and remind the world, or even just your cul-de-sac, that bigotry and hate are unacceptable, that we won't allow racism to permeate our society, that love wins and brings pop. Let's invite people beyond our usual circles, neighbors, friends, co-workers, newcomers, so that we can get to know and better understand feelings and perspectives beyond our own. So we can look at those who feel scared or marginalized in the eye and remind them that we stand with them. So that maybe we can generate a clearer sense of where to go to from here. Or at least provide comfort to each other at a time when every day it seems to be a new reason to be scared and horrified. I loved learning a while ago that in Switzerland, in French, a potluck, I wish Maya was here, reading for you. I learned that in Switzerland, in French, a potluck is called pique-nique-canadien. A Canadian picnic. That's potluck in Switzerland. Pique-nique-canadien. She said, Canada isn't so much a melting pot as a potluck. We all bring something unique and wonderful to the table. There are a few better ways to get to know each other than over a meal, particularly one everyone has contributed to. And if you can, gather some people for a meal or snack or coffee this weekend. Do something when you can. This sort of thing never expires and should really carry on forever. If you're in Calgary, she says, let's all get together. We're going to have a big potluck picnic at St. Patrick's Island at the confluence of the Bow and Elbow Rivers on traditional Blackfoot territory this Sunday, August 20th, today. I hope you can come anytime between 12 and 4. And if it spills over into the evening, we'll light a big fire pit at the top of the rise, that big smooth hill right in the middle. Bring something, as much or as little as you like, enough to share with a few others. And if you don't have the time or means to make something, please come anyway. Rather than organize a buffet-style pop-up with one long table, let's keep it simple. Everyone can pack a picnic, find a patch of grass, or spread out onto benches and tables throughout the park for longer, mingled chat. See what others have brought, learn some things. What do you think? I'll bring extra forks, she said. We can all do something. Every small act of reconciliation, peace, and understanding contributes to becoming a better world. That's the hope. I'm going to read you something that was written this week by my friend and colleague, Tom Melvin, from Deer Park United Church in Calgary, whose home state is Virginia. I ask his permission to share this with you today. His heart, of course, was heavy and broken by events that took place there this week, so he wrote, "Hate, the demon, causes the hater to demonize others. The demons then are the ones out to get us, or those who take away our privilege through demanding equality regarding those same privileges. Hate definitely projects one's own insecurities and fears onto the other who is different, and most significantly, the ones who are different because of race, color, sexual orientation, religion, and country of origin. Hate makes the hater think that mistreating others will win them the heritage we have lost and regain once again our privilege. Hate never imagines the alternative. Hate thrives on fear and violence. Hate makes the hater feel superior through seeing the other as a threat and as less than fully human. Dehumanization is a powerful tactic. Hate is taught through actions and attitudes. People all included here, learn hate in various ways. A song is heard on the radio when it's liked, and when it's said, I hate that song. One struggles, say, with math and responds, I hate math. The weather turns from sunny to stormy and again, I hate this weather, is the response. Hate comes in teaching one to mistrust others. Hate grows through stereotypes and prejudices. Hate lurks always just inside the heart and mind. Hate hardens the heart and sows suspicion in the mind. The only way to exorcise the demon of hate is through love. Love is grace in action. Love accepts the other without judgment and discrimination. Love is aware of the propensity to hold hate and casts a light upon it. Hate cannot abide in the light of love. Love casts out fear, a major contributor to hate. Love casts out fear at its best in and through community where one is not alone. Such love casts out fear to act, to be open, and to risk. More than ever, those who know love, and at some level that includes all, must be together in community to practice love, to act with love, and to grow in love. Lovers and loving community must become just every bit intentional in teaching about love and living in love as the haters are in regards to hate. No longer can those of us who love sit back and not engage. Love now. Love boldly. Find community. Be hospitable. Act in love. And act in love again. Reverend Tom. Love, in the end, because it is God, is the only antidote to fear and hatred. Practice it in abundance today and in the days and weeks to come. Listen and try to understand. There is no reconciliation or justice without understanding. To change anything, we must understand what we're dealing with rather than to rail against it in our conversations because it's not helpful. Instead, talk about how we are going to become more loving instead of talking about what is going on in the world. Where's the hope? It is in exactly these conversations about love. It is found in every action by an individual or a group that stands up and says, we will not tolerate fear and hatred and violence. We will do something about it. We won't be silent. We will love and care and reach out. We will not be afraid because love is stronger than fear. Next Saturday, we will be participating in the Pride in the Park event at Ethel Tucker Park. the 1-6, and some that we know in a community won't like it. And we will do it, because we believe it is the right to do it. And I hope to see some of you there. United Church put out a post this week that said, in the aftermath of the march by white supremacists and white nationalists in Virginia, the United Church calls its members to recommit themselves to challenging the systemic racism and accompany those working for racial justice and equity. The United Church remains firmly committed to racial justice, equity, and intercultural engagement. The events in Charlottesville have only emphasized the imperative for these commitments. Friends, the world needs mending. What are we going to do to help it heal? Eternal God, in the midst of fear and pain, you are there. When tensions build,